So this evening, you put the 15th verse of the 7th chapter on this board. The purport is very long, 4 pages long. Oh, anyway. Now, those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Purport. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering oneself under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. At this point, a question arises. How is it that educated philosophers, scientists, businessmen, administrators, and all the leaders of ordinary men do not surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the all-powerful personality of Godhead? Mukti, or liberation from the laws of material nature, is sought by the leaders of mankind in different ways and with great plans and perseverance for a great many years and births. But if that liberation is possible by simply surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then why don't these intelligent and hard-working leaders adopt this simple method? The Gita answers this question very frankly. Those really learned leaders of society, like Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, the Kumaras, Manu, Vyas, Devala, Asita, Janaka, Prahlad, Bali, and later on, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya, and many others, who are faithful philosophers, politicians, educators, scientists, etc., surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Person, the all-powerful authority. Those who are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, etc., but who pose themselves as such for material gain, do not accept the plan or path of the Supreme Lord. They have no idea of God. They simply manufacture their own worldly plans and consequently complicate the problems of material existence in their vain attempts to solve them. Because material energy, nature, is so powerful, it can resist the unauthorized plans of the atheists and baffle the knowledge of planning commissioners. The atheistic plan makers are described here by the word duskritinaha, or miscreants. Kriti means one who has performed meritorious works. The atheist plan maker is sometimes very intelligent and meritorious also, because any gigantic plan, good or bad, must take intelligence to execute. But because the atheist brain is improperly utilized in opposing the plan of the Supreme Lord, the atheistic plan maker is called duskriti, which indicates that his intelligence and efforts are misdirected. In the Gita, it is clearly mentioned that material energy works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It has no independent authority. It works as the shadow moves in accordance with the movements of the object. But still, material energy is very powerful, and the atheist, due to his godless temperament, cannot know how it works, nor can he know the plan of the Supreme Lord. Under illusion and the modes of passion and ignorance, all his plans are baffled, as in the case of Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, whose plans were smashed to dust, although they were both materially learned as scientists, philosophers, administrators, and educators. These duskritinas, or miscreants, are of 4 different patterns as outlined below. And then, in the rest of the purport, Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain these 4. Mudha, Naradama, Maya Paritta Jnana, and Asura. So I'd just like to speak on this first part we just read. Prabhupada says, those who are really learned leaders of society, and then he mentions a number of great souls. Anyone know the collective name of these personalities that were mentioned here? Yes? Yes. So I want to know, what is their collective designation? The Mahajans, yes. There's 12 Mahajans. So now, the Mahajans are presented, as you've pointed out, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're presented in the Bhagavat Purana, which is the Amal Purana, spotless Purana, the purest recension of Vedic knowledge. So they're presented as the topmost authorities. So then we might ask, well, what about the others? There are so many other authorities, authorities in the Jnanakanda, authorities in the Karmakanda. So what is their position? So we should now consider that there are two types of knowledge, two types of Vedic knowledge, Paravidya and Aparavidya. So Paravidya is specifically taught by these 12 Mahajans. Paravidya means the transcendental knowledge, the knowledge which pertains to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Tattva and Bhagavad Dharma. These are terms used by Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Tattva means the truth of Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, and Bhagavad Dharma means the dharma or the path of religion which brings one to Bhagavan, the path of Bhakti Yoga. Bhagavad Dharma specifically means, in the Vedas you will find Varna Ashram Dharma explained, but it is explained in different ways. So there are those who explained in terms of Jnanakandra that by Varna Ashram Dharma one achieves moksha, liberation. There are those who explain it in terms of Karmakanda. They're only concerned with the Trivarga, what's called the Trivarga, Dharma, Artha, Kama. So that you follow the rules and regulations, Dharma, you get Artha, wealth, and Kama, then you can enjoy. And that's it. So the Karmis who are within Vedic civilization, that is their concern. And the Jnanis, they're concerned with the fourth, the Chaturvarga, the fourth of them, the moksha. So this all falls within the Aparavidya. Aparavidya means material knowledge. But material knowledge, yes, there's also Vedic material knowledge. For those who are unable, due to, we were reading last night, Ashradhana Purusha Dharmashyasya Parantapa Apropyamam Nivartante Mrityu Sangsara Vartmani. Lord Krishna says that there are those who are Ashradhana, those who have not enough faith. Actually, you can see that in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada, in that purport we were reading last night, he was saying, stressing so much, that faith is the key to success in Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, there are so many things. One has to follow rules and regulations. We have to, Prabhupada once says, he said, don't be dull-headed. We should study the Shastra. Prabhupada said we should try to write every day our realizations of Krishna consciousness. We should preach. So many things are there for us to do. But the foundation of it all, the success or failure of it all, is faith. Devotees always ask, it is so difficult to do this or to do that. We're having trouble in this area, that area. So they want and they get specific answers. But ultimately, what is the source of all the problems? It's a problem of faith. That's all. If one has nishta means firm, unshakable faith, then one has no problems. One may be a very simple person. One may not be very expert in anything, particularly. One may not be, you know, as Prabhupada says here, what does he say? Oh, yes. scientist, philosopher, administrator, educator, one may not have any of these qualifications. But if one has firm faith in Guru and in Krishna, yasya deva para bhaktir tata deva tata guru tasitya katate yartam prakashante mahatmana. The Shastra says, just by this, if one has a firm faith that what Krishna says is what the Guru says, and what Guru says is what Krishna says. That's all. One has faith. And of course, one has faith that I am meant only for following Guru and Krishna. Their order is my life and soul. Sometimes such devotees are criticized as fanatics. But this type of fanaticism, better to be this kind of fanatic than to be lazy and crazy. Lazy and foolish, lazy and crazy. This so-called liberal thinking. It's all, yes, actually Prabhupada said devotee is liberal. Because if one has this firm faith in Guru and Krishna, then one has faith in their mission. One must have faith in the mission of Guru and Krishna. And that mission includes everyone. So there, naturally, actually devotee, he's liberal-minded. Prabhupada explained, liberal means that no one is rejected. We don't turn any class of man or woman away. We don't say, oh, because you weren't born in this kind of family, therefore you cannot come here. Of course, Prabhupada once said, we do not want men from Afghanistan. But that's another thing. That's because in Mayapur, Prabhupada was in the lotus building and he looked out and there was one person who was always wearing a towel over his head. He was running everywhere. Prabhupada could see him running this way and that way in the grounds of Mayapur. And he was always keeping a towel over his head and it was also covering his face. So more or less, you know, it looked like someone with a white cloth bag over his head. And he was a Western boy, but he had joined devotees who were passing through Afghanistan. So then Prabhupada, seeing this person, he said, who is this? And then this sannyasi, I think Bhavananda or someone who was there, only knew that this boy had come from Afghanistan. So he said, oh, he is from Afghanistan, Srila Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada said, we do not want men from Afghanistan. Especially not those who have a bag over their head. Anyway, no, liberal means everyone, we understand everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. Every human being has, by this human birth, the right to take up Krishna consciousness. So in that sense, a devotee is liberal-minded, not narrow-minded. But there's another kind of liberal thinking which strays away from this firm nishta, firm unshakable faith in Guru and Krishna and enters other things. Other so-called sources of knowledge. So then this compromise immediately makes one spiritually weak. And this is the dangerous position because then one is attacked by Maya. So, even if, as I was saying, even if one is very simple, if one has Guru Nishta, Guru and Krishna Nishta, then one's success is assured. So, the Duskritina is mentioned here. Duskritina is actually, we mentioned Paravidya, Aparavidya. Both are within the realm of Vedic knowledge. And then there's a third kind of, you can call it knowledge, but the actual term is avidya, which means ignorance, or ignorance passing as knowledge. So this avidya, this comprises so-called learning and so-called culture, which is all forbidden in the Vedic scriptures, whether you're talking about the Bhakti Shastras or the Jnana Shastras or the Karma Shastras. There's simply no place for these things, like this meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. Of course, in some Vedic Shastras also, very limitedly. The point is to restrict it. But in this avidya conception, then these sinful activities are meant to be expanded like anything. Their so-called science is dedicated to how you can do this all the time, better and better and better. And this is called progress. Why should it be restricted? Why should it be restricted? No. We, the demons, will devise ways by which people can enjoy illicit sex without any difficulty at all, without any, don't have to worry about conception or anything. Just have illicit sex, eat whatever you want. We'll make arrangements so that every example of the 8,400,000 species will be in the supermarket. Eat it all. Intoxication, yes, like anything. Take all kinds of drugs as you like. And gambling. So they try to make a culture, they try to make a philosophy out of these sinful activities, and that is called avidya. And Prabhupada mentions Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, these great demons. They were able for some time to conquer the whole universe with such a kind, or in Ravana's case, not exactly the whole universe, but very much, very large regions of the universe. And Hiranyakashipu, practically the whole universe, he conquered. And then he established this as the culture, this sinful activities. And now in the earth, this earth planet, it has become overrun with demons, and they've similarly established these four sinful activities as knowledge and as human culture. And what does this do? This culture of avidya. It brings upon us devastation. It brings upon us devastation. So, there are four kinds of dushkritina. Prabhupada explains they're able to manifest a gigantic plan. But again, what does that plan accomplish? Only destruction. Of course, they're not anticipating that. They're thinking, just like that biblical story. Or also Ravana, Prabhupada said he tried to do the same thing. Ravana, he was, I guess, the originator of the staircase to heaven. As he built the tower reaching up to heaven. Meaning that there's no need to follow any rules and regulations. By our own endeavor, by some mechanistic construction, some contraption, we will be able to enter into heaven. We don't care what anyone says. We don't care for any laws, any rules. We'll go where we want to go. So, whenever this was attempted, those who were attempting, they died in the attempt. They were destroyed. And it is going on now. It's just like they're sending some space probe to Mars. They just launched it a couple months ago. They're very curious about the Mars planet now. You may know, you may have heard, they think they have found some evidence of life there. Of course, it's a very strange logic. They found a red stone in the ice of Antarctica, and they say it comes from Mars. A meteor. They say it's a meteor, and then they looked at it and they think they see some life. And then apart from that, there's one place, the region on Mars, where the last time one of these machines passed by, took photos. And then in two photos, there is something. You'll find it's very interesting. I just saw a video about this. Yeah, I have the video with me. Actually, some scientist was explaining. So it appears on the top of a hill on this particular region of Mars. On the top of a hill, there is carved a face looking upward. Nearby this face, there are some pyramids. And then there's another thing that looks like a kind of fortress. Very artificial looking structures. And the face, it's very interesting what the scientists are saying about this face. They say it's the face of a man lion. I have this video. I just saw it. I got it from Chiranjeev Prabhu. So the scientists are saying it seems to be the combination of the facial features of a man and a lion. So then, anyway, very interesting. So they're very curious to know more about this. They're not sure. The scientists are divided. Some are saying, well, this is just some trick of light and shadow. But others are saying, no, it's there's too many. There's not only the face, but there's pyramids, and there's a fortress, this square thing, and other things, some round, very round hills nearby, which, you know, they're terraced, you know, they have, you know what I mean? There's like steps going up, all the circular steps, it's terraced. And it's all gathered in this one area, so they think it is maybe some kind of Martian city of Nisringa Bhaktas. So this thing is going to fly by and take photos. So this is the demoniac enterprise. They want to know everything by machinery, by mechanical process. They want to conquer the world in this way, by materialistic means. But all of this attracts destruction. So Lord Krishna says, the common quality of all these people is that they never surrender. Na mam duskritino mudha prapadyante. Prapadyante means surrender. They never surrender to Krishna. So this is this class of man. Then they are instinctively opposed to the demigods and to the devotees. And this is the age-old conflict in this universe. Yeah? Shastra says there are two types of living beings, the devotees, daiva asura eva cha. Daiva means devotees, asura means the demons. And they're always opposed to one another. But it is also explained that out of this opposition, it is like friction. So when there are two opposite things rubbing together, then it creates friction, electricity or fire. So like that, Lord Krishna himself appears. So we may ask, why did the Lord arrange the universe like this? That there are pious persons and demoniac persons, and they are in conflict. And this is the reason. Krishna takes advantage of this. As he says, Paritanaya sarunam vinashaya chudushkritam. I appear out of this conflict. And the sadhus, the saintly persons, the devotees, he delivers. And vinashaya chudushkritam. Again, the same word, dushkritta. This same class of men, Vinashaya, I destroy them. So Krishna destroying them, that is their good fortune. They're such rascals, they never surrender to Krishna. They never surrender to Krishna. That means they're eternally condemned. They condemn themselves. But Krishna is so kind. He appears out of this conflict of his devotees and these demons. He delivers his devotees, yes, but he kills those demons. And so when the Lord personally kills those demons, then they are purified. We were reading yesterday morning, Prabhupada is explaining how great demons like Kamsa and Shishupal and Dantavakra and Paundraka, these great demons in the Lord's pastime, they all attained a position in the spiritual world. Putana. They all attained position in the spiritual world as the Lord's associates. Now, this is not possible. Ordinarily, this is not possible because their very instinct is to hate Krishna. And yet, Krishna is so kind that he appears out of this friction. This means his appearance, his pastime, his leela, it encompasses both the demons and the devotees. So both of them are included within the Lord's absolute program, his transcendental plan. And this is the greatest fortune for these demons. Krishna is so kind. As it is said, a father, he may have a good son and he may have a bad son. So when he pats the good son on the head, "Oh, my dear boy, you are so nice." And when the other one, he gives a slap. But actually, he's dealing with both the same. It's difficult for people to understand. But he's actually dealing with both of them the same. Because what is his motivation? His motivation is the welfare of both. He wants his sons to be good. So the one who's good, he rewards him. "You are good, very nice, stay good. If you stay like this, then I will always reward you." And the other one, that means, "Don't be bad, don't do this nonsense. I'm not good. You be like your brother." So actually, he means the welfare of both. And so, similarly, Lord Krishna, when he appears to save, to rescue, to deliver his devotees, and to annihilate, this annihilation of the demons is just the same thing. He's saving them also. Okay. Are there any questions? Well, the faith is there. A human being cannot exist without faith. Everybody has faith in something. People say, "I only have faith in myself." Or even someone says, "I have faith in nothing." But it's still faith. Everybody has faith. We have to believe something. Otherwise, you can't function. You see, just like to walk across the floor, you have to believe. You know, because science says, I was explaining in the lecture in Gothenburg last night in the Govinda Center, that actually it's our faith, you know, that we say this is solid matter. It's also kind of faith. We may think it's obvious fact, but it's not obvious fact. Because scientists tell us that, what is this? It is just so many tiny, tiny atoms, little particles, which when you come down, if you can enter that perspective, understanding matter as particles, then these particles are separated by so much empty space. Not just like the stars in the sky are separated from one another. So that proportionately also, the atoms are separated from one another by space. So it is actually only a kind of faith that we say this is solid matter. So one has to have faith even just to walk across the floor, that with the next step the floor won't disappear. It could happen, Sometimes it happens, things like this. Strange things happen to people. I've seen photos of where in certain parts of the world where there's just some what's called anomaly. Anomaly means some unusual deformation of under the earth. There's some unusual kind of problem under the earth where a hollow is forming, sometimes due to passage of water and different reasons. So then it has happened, people are sitting in their house, nice big house, sitting, taking some tea, talking. And suddenly a hole just opened up and the whole house fell, you know, 50, 100 meters into a big hole. But it can happen. We all have faith that it won't happen to us. It could happen. Anything could. So, see, from moment to moment, we're acting on faith. We make plans in the future because we have faith that we'll be here tomorrow. So you cannot escape faith. Everybody has faith. So then the question is, so you have faith, then why not faith in Krishna? What is faith? There's a nice definition of faith. Faith means a state of mind which is appropriate to receive the truth. That's good faith, proper faith. But what about the state of mind which is not ready to receive the truth? So there's also faith, but it's bad faith. I was talking on this theme yesterday. And why aren't people ready to receive the truth? The same point. Namam prapadyante. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. Because there are consequences. There are consequences. When you come to this Hare Krishna temple and you associate with the devotees and you hear the class and you discuss with the devotees, get your questions answered, then there's a consequence to all that. The consequence is get out of Maya. You know, the consequence is you like this philosophy. Yes, it's very nice. Then why are you still in Maya if you like this philosophy? Oh. Because the philosophy is it's demanding. If you accepted this is the truth, then you should be here. You should be here. You should give up this life of sense gratification, either live in the temple or come to the temple, but engage in Krishna's devotional service with no other activity. So that's the consequence. But people are not ready for that. So therefore, they resist. And this resistance, this is called faithlessness or lack of faith. Because they can understand, anyone can understand what the consequences are of accepting this philosophy fully. I told a story last night, maybe I've told it here before, I'm not going to tell the whole thing, just the end of it, that there was a man who had lost his memory and had ended up becoming, he was made the king of a very primitive tribe of jungle people. There's a whole story how that happened. He lost his memory, everything. So he ended up sitting on a big throne in this jungle village with some kind of feather crown on his head, some far-out dress. And the native people were worshipping him, bringing him offerings. And so he became very, you know, accustomed to this life. But yes, I'm king. But he's not king. He's actually belonged to a civilized village. And his brother had come. His brother had been searching through the jungle for a long, long time and finally found him in the village. And the brother was trying to explain, "You come back. I've come, I'm your brother." But he couldn't remember because he'd lost his memory. He couldn't even understand this language anymore. He was speaking the native language. So then his brother patiently stayed there in the village and began to, you know, just on the plea of teaching him this language, teaching him the language the brother was speaking. So the king was interested, "Oh, learn a new language, all right." So as he was teaching him the language, then he was also preaching to him. So he gradually began to understand that actually I'm not a king. I don't belong to these people here. I'm his brother. I should go back to the village where I came from. But he wasn't willing to accept that. He understood that this is the truth, what he's saying. But he'd become very attached to being the king of this village. And so then his mind, you know, his mind refused. His mind just froze up at one point. He could no longer talk with his brother anymore, nor was he happy any longer in being a king of the village. He was just in a kind of in-between state, neither here nor there. So this is what happens to people who don't have enough faith. Hearing, associating with devotees, they learn that the material world, yes, it's just Maya. But the devotees are saying, "So come with us. Come to the temple, come with us back to Godhead." "Oh, I don't know if I want to do that either." So then they cannot enjoy the material world any longer, nor can they seriously practice Krishna consciousness. So, but Prabhupada, in that verse, Shraddhana Purusha purport, he explains that the remedy for this is association. If we just continue to associate with devotees, then because this association is so nice, we may be attached, and we may be very slow. But if we continue to associate with devotees, then gradually these obstacles will be removed. Any other questions? Okay. Yes?
Can the Mayavadi surrender to Krishna if he, for example, gets much prasadam?
Yeah, eventually. Mayavadi, Prabhupada said, is a person who doesn't want to get up from sleep. Prabhupada said, one who is just sleeping, you know, only sleeping, they're easy to wake up. You say, "Hey, Prabhu, get up." They hear that, "Oh, all right," and they get up. But one who's pretending to sleep, he doesn't want to get up. You can never make a person get up who's just pretend. You "Come on, Prabhu," and he just continues to pretend to, you know, just lays there, doesn't respond. One who's simply sleeping, he responds, he hears. But one who doesn't want to get up, then he pretends to sleep. So Mayavadis are like that. They're pretending. In other words, they're determined. That's the meaning, Mayavadi. They're determined to remain in Maya. So it's very, very difficult. Whatever you preach to them, it, you know, they go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." They understand it in their own way. They think they know better than you. You're trying to preach to them, and they think they already know it even better than you. So there's nothing to talk about anyway. Anyway, because the truth is beyond all talk. So that's their conclusion. And yet they go on talking. This is the meaning of pretending to sleep. So give them prasadam, yes. We can, in this way, trick them. Just like there was a devotee in one temple. He would not get up for Mangal Arati any morning. And he would sleep, very often he would sleep until breakfast time, you know, just before. Just so that he could get up and take shower and make himself ready to be for breakfast. 8 o'clock, like that. Sometimes he would get up before, a little bit, you know, 7 o'clock, come to the Guru Puja, but in this way he would make sure at least that he was ready for prasadam. So this was his determination every morning. So the temple president, and one morning, because just like now, it's winter, so the sun rises late. Sun might not start coming up in the middle of the winter till, you know, 8:30. So it was such a time of year. So the temple president came at 4 o'clock, half an hour before the Mangal Arati. And he quickly reset that devotee's clock to 8 o'clock. And then he said, "Oh, Prabhu! Prabhu, you're going to miss prasadam." And he looked, oh! He got up and ran into the shower. Took a shower and came. And then the temple president was smiling. "All right, now you can go to Mangal Arati." Oh! So in this way, these people, we try to find a way to trick them. And prasadam, giving them prasadam is one good way. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.